Welcome to a Juno Afternoon on Thursday, February 25th, 2016. I'm your host, Scott Burton, in for Joan Pardis. On today's show, we'll find out about the 14th annual oratory event at UAS with Colleen and Lyle James. We'll get a preview of the one-man theater show, Wrestling Jerusalem. Audra Henderson will be here to highlight the new cosmetology school opening in town. We'll talk with KJ Metcalf about Friends of Admiralty's annual meeting, and Nancy DeCherney will be here with Arts Up, those interviews, National Native News, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note Music, and more, right here on a Juno Afternoon. 44 at the Juno Airport, 44 in Hoonah, and 37 in Haines and Skagway.
I'm Tara Gatewood, sitting in for Antonia Gonzalez. A federal judge has finalized a nearly $1 billion settlement over underfunded tribal contracts. The order from the U.S. District Judge James A. Parker seals a $940 million payout from the Obama administration, first announced last September after more than two decades of legal wrangling. The money will be distributed among 700 tribes and tribal organizations. New Mexico's Zuni Pueblo was one of the original plaintiffs, arguing in 1990 that the federal government failed to completely fund contracts for education, tribal courts, land management, and other services mandated by the Constitution, treaties, and congressional action. Zuni Governor Val Pantia says the agreement finally settles the government's past financial responsibility and sets the stage for adequate funding in the future.
From here on in, I feel that it's going to make the government, you know, realize that they can't shortchange us. They can't deny us any of those additional fundings for us to run the program that we've contracted.
Pantia says the money will go toward shoring up a quarter of a century of inadequate funding that created significant hardships for Zuni and other tribes. The Supreme Court ruled in favor of the tribes in 2012. It took another 3 years to draft a document all sides could agree on. Navajo Nation President Russell B. Gay has signed into law the tribe's largest ever spending package. It'll use part of a settlement from a federal lawsuit to fund more than 100 water and sanitation projects. Arizona Public Radio's Ryan Heinches reports.
Many communities throughout the Navajo Nation suffer from poor water quality. Tribal officials say the bill will protect public health by cleaning up water contamination and will also enhance economic development. The tribe will spend $180 million to fix sewer systems in larger towns like Tuba City and Chinle in Arizona and Shiprock in New Mexico, as well as several other locations. The bill will also provide water to homes that lack indoor plumbing. Navajo Nation President Russell Begay says the project is among the most comprehensive water initiatives in the tribe's history.
At the chapter level, a lot of homes will be getting water lines, people that have been asking for water to be piped into their homes. This is very, very significant that many, many homes will get water now.
The funds will come from a $554 million lawsuit that alleged the federal government mismanaged Navajo natural resources for more than 50 years. It was the largest settlement ever won by an American Indian tribe. Begay says the water project will be the first of several initiatives to be funded by the settlement money. Tribal officials also plan to install power lines and begin road construction in the coming years. For National Native News, I'm Ryan Heinches in Flagstaff.
A war of words continues after two high school basketball coaches were fired following an on-court altercation. The Santa Fe Indian School fired head coach Cece Moses and her husband, assistant coach Rick Schimmel, following a February 17th game between Santa Fe and St. Michael's. Since then, Schimmel claims the St. Michael's athletic director used racial slurs against the Santa Fe players and coaching staff. The Santa Fe New Mexican reports the athletic director, Tom Manning, denies using any racial slurs. The Santa Fe Indian School officials say the altercation during the game was regrettable and said the school apologizes for contributing to an unsportsmanlike atmosphere. The school does not detail specifically why they fired the two coaches. Schimmel told the Santa Fe New Mexican he and his wife will comment on the situation later. For National Native News, I'm Tara Gatewood.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Support by VisionMaker Media, whose mission is to empower and engage Native people to tell stories. On February 20th, VisionMaker Media celebrates 40 years of advancing Native culture, heritage, wisdom, sacred stories, and the storyteller. More at visionmakermedia.org.
Support for this program is provided by the Native American Rights Fund, reminding you that sovereignty is not free. You too can become a modern-day warrior. Stand firm with NARF. Learn more at narf.org and join the fight for Native rights.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
You're listening to A Juno Afternoon here on Thursday, February 25th, 2016. Scott Burton, your host, in for Joan Partis. And with me in the studio now is Colleen James. She's the coordinator of the Native Rural Student Center at UAS. And also Lyle James, he teaches oratory out at UAS. Welcome to the show, Colleen and Lyle.
Thank you.
Ms. Cheesh.
Nice to have you both here. The 14th annual oratory event. Colleen, you want to start by telling us about it?
Sure. We host out at UAS the annual oratory gathering where students have an opportunity to take an issue that they are passionate about that impacts Alaska and share it with our other students who are participating with the event, as well as the volunteer faculty, staff, and some of our community leaders. And it's an opportunity, a professional development opportunity to get feedback from the leaders. And they also get tuition waivers or scholarships is how we refer to them for students who participate with the event. So the students every year try to figure out a theme and how to decolonize this event. And so so equity is the theme of the oratory event, and any one of the oratory, dramatic declamation, storytelling, Native language, we're asking students to prepare their presentations and speak to equity. And, of course, equity is this huge, huge topic, and it covers everything and anything you can think of that impacts our communities. And so I mentioned that we're trying to decolonize. Wu Qin is our leadership club on campus, and they're the students who are consistently committed to hosting this event on campus that's open for their peers and for high school students. And they're tackling decolonizing this year is to take the scholarships that they have been gifted by the university. And to, for any student interested in participating, they will get a scholarship. So we have a set amount of money that the university is gifted to this event. And the students have, instead of doing first, second, third scholarship prize, students will get a scholarship for participating with the event. So oratory is the art of speaking, and that's something that's inherent to our cultures of Alaska and all, I think, Native groups. Oratory is a big part of our culture, and the oratory, dramatic declamation, storytelling, and world language categories, they are, in fact, equity in action. We don't see these regularly in our classrooms. And so this is also an opportunity for students to exercise speaking to dramatic declamation, where we highlight an author, a Native American author or Alaska Native author, and we share part of their already created song, poem, or if they wrote an article. Students can pick any anything that speaks to them, share it out, and then explain what they believe the author was trying to convey to the audience. Storytelling is a traditional category in that students have to cite their sources, if it was an elder that gave them permission to share the story, if it was something that was in print, so they would have to cite the author and where they found the story. They have to do an introduction to the story. If it belongs to a specific tribe, they'll share that. And then what was it, what was the moral of the story that the students were hoping to convey to the audience? World language. So last year, there's a change. This is probably my 14th year coming here. But this this year that's different is the change with the world language category is that the students decided after last year's making the 20 Alaska Native languages the official language of the state, the students decided that they were going to pour their efforts into lifting all 20 languages up. So any student wanting to learn to speak any one of the 20 languages that belong or come from our state, they have an opportunity to do their presentation. Over 50% of their oral presentation has to be in one of our Alaska Native languages. So,
okay.
Woo.
Wow. Thank you for that description. Lyle, will you tell me a little bit about your class and how some of your students are preparing for this?
The students that sign up for this course, they actually are taking the time to look at each category and base their speech around equity and how it affects their everyday life, things that might be missing and things that they can include. And what they'll do is what we're going to try to do by the end of the course, their final presentation will be at the oratory competition itself.
Nice.
So they're taking the time to put the energy into the topic that they want to present during oratory competition.
Sure. And so there's oratory, storytelling, Alaska Native language, and the dramatic declamation. Do you find that they're sort of gravitating toward one, or is it equal?
They're pretty much equal.
Okay.
I mean, it's hard to do a public presentation without any one of these categories involved, but to direct it.
Okay.
For me, the way I understand and the way I present, I take something that is brought from dramatic declamation, for instance. I will do a little bit of research and I'll have the students do a little research on if they're going to present. They have to explain how this person inspired them or how this reading inspired them so that that way when they talk about it, they have to explain how that's equity in action or equity within our community that is needed.
I see. Colleen, can you tell us a little bit about the atmosphere that day? What's it like? It sounds very exciting.
Well, it's exciting, I think, for the judges and for the volunteers. It's exciting for the MCs. But then the students are a little nervous, and so there's a lot of bringing students water and calming their nerves. But it's really amazing to watch the students in action. They're really passionate about their presentations. They really put their heart into the presentation, and then you can tell when they get up to the microphone. They just emote their energy, their love into their presentation. So it's pretty inspiring. It's inspiring.
And again, this is on Saturday, March 5th. It's at the Egan Lecture Hall. It's totally free and open to the public, right?
Yes. Yep.
And one can still register if you're a UAS student. Is that correct?
Right. If you are a current student in this semester, spring semester, 3 credits or more, you can participate in this event. Stop by the Native Memorial Student Center, fill out a registration form. It's just it's a real simple form. It just asks for which category you'd like to compete in. You have up to 2 categories that you can select from and present in. Put your name, your email, your contact number so that we can remind you and about the event and invite you to do practice rounds with us. So.
And where is the NRSC, the Native Rural Student Center, on campus?
The Native Rural Student Center is located in the Morant Building, so where our cafeteria is. It's on the first floor. We're on the second floor, right below.
And if somebody had questions about the event, they weren't sure if they wanted to enter, should they come and find you there?
Absolutely. They could come and talk to any one of us in the Native Memorial Student Center.
Okay. Again, this is the 14th Annual Oratory Event at UAS, free to the public, Saturday, March 5th in the Egan Lecture Hall. An all-day event, really, from 9 to 6.
It is. It is.
Okay. Looking forward to this. Is there anything else either of you would like to add?
This is a good opportunity for us as a community for who are looking for new leaders, upcoming leaders, to take the time to hear their voices and the work that they've done and hear their passion.
Yeah, I would echo that, too, that we have students who are talking about environmental issues. They're talking about education and their concerns. They're talking about the healthcare system and unmet needs in their home communities. We have students from all over Alaska who are attending UAS. We even have a student from Hawaii who's going to participate as well. And there's a lot of similarities in the inequities that we experience in both states, Hawaii and Alaska. So this is a great opportunity to hear what our college students, and if we have some brave high school students, what's on their mind.
All right. Colleen and Lyle James, thank you both for coming on the show. We'll see you Saturday, March 5th at the annual oratory event.
Wrestling Jerusalem, a journey to understand the Israeli-Palestinian story, will tour through Juneau after a sold-out run at the Guthrie Theater in Minneapolis. Aaron Davidman grapples with the complexities of identity, history, and social justice. Giving voice to over a dozen characters, Aaron transcends our assumptions and sheds light and hope on this most entrenched international conflict. Wrestling Jerusalem opens on March 3rd at the Jack. For more information and tickets, visit ptalaska.org, the Jack, and Hearthside Books.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Thursday, February 25th, 2016. Scott Burton in for Joan Pardis. It's about 20 minutes after the hour. And speaking of Wrestling Jerusalem, I have Rich Moniak, Natalie Rothaus, and Amy O'Neill Hauk in the studio now to talk about this play, which is coming our way. Welcome to the show, everyone.
Thanks. Hi there.
Thank you.
Okay. So, Rich, you were saying that Mr. Davidman,
Aaron Davidman
will be in town early next week.
On Monday.
And he is the writer, producer, actor.
He's the works. He's the whole show.
He's the one-person show here. Who wants to outline what the show is about for us?
Natalie's seen it, so maybe Natalie can talk.
All right.
Yeah, I had a wonderful opportunity last fall to see this in San Francisco. Aaron's a Bay Area-based actor, director. He's been probably in the theater for 20-plus years. He ran for many years what was known as the Traveling Jewish Theater. He's actually been up here and directed a main stage for Perseverance a couple of years ago. He's performed at Arena Stage. We are very excited because we are getting this piece, this work right after he's performed it at the Guthrie, and it's on its way to New York. It's pretty much a conversation and a very compelling work where Aaron portrays up to about 17 different characters that are Israeli, Palestinian, Muslim, Jewish, political, just the person on the street, to try to come to an understanding of not only the conflict that is currently and has been for so long in the Middle East, but also to come to an understanding that if people will listen to somebody who's the other and just stop and see that we do have commonalities and that we might not walk away with an answer, but we might walk away with a deeper understanding of another individual and hear other sides of a situation that's very complex. This is not necessarily a political work. It's very emotional. It's extremely well acted and well written.
Okay. And the three of you sort of represent a partnership in bringing the play. Sukkot Shalom, is that right, Natalie?
That's right, Congregation Sukkot Shalom.
And Juno People for Peace and Justice,
that's
Rich,
correct, yeah.
And Perseverance Theater?
As well as Northern Light United Church.
Okay. And the performances will be across the street at the Jack, is that right?
That's correct, March 3 to 6.
Okay. Four performances?
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell me the details of those?
Sure. So it's Thursday and Friday evening, and then Saturday matinees and Sunday matinee at 2 p.m.
And I believe tickets are $25?
That's right.
Okay, and I've heard a lot of buzz about this already. Mm-hmm. I suspect that getting tickets early might be a good choice.
Yeah, definitely a good idea. You know, one of the things that Natalie was making me think about is the fact that Aaron says that, you know, news is polemic when talking about this idea, but theater has the room to be nuanced and to sort of discover the messiness of real life, and that's what he wants to engage with. And I think he does a really beautiful job of that.
Yeah. So, Rich Moniak, you got to interview Mr. Davidman for your show, Peace Talk, which, by the way, listeners, is online at ktoo.org, an extended interview with Aaron Davidman, and about 30 minutes, I think you probably spent
about 20
him.
Minutes, yeah.
Yeah. And one of the things he said in the interview is, theater says aloud to the public and community what we're afraid to say on our own. It helps to promote more conversation among the things that you said to each other. I thought that was really poignant.
Well, it was, and it speaks to, you know, the congregation, Sukkot Shalom, and the Juno People for Peace and Justice, you know, began this conversation before we knew the play was out there. We began a conversation that stemmed from an ad JPPJ placed in the Juno Empire during the war in Gaza in the summer of 2014. And Dov Gartenberg
he was the rabbi at the time here in Juno.
Yeah, he was upset by the ad and wanted to debate the larger politics that we're always debating. And it turned, you know, that initial contact turned into a conversation where we all sat down around a table for a few hours on a few different nights and started listening to each other as human beings first and pushing aside the politics and cultural differences that you know, we listen to and divide us. And those are the things that come out, you know, you get down to the personal level and you realize, first of all, if we can't solve any big conflict if we can't communicate amongst ourselves, you know. And then Natalie saw the play and it fit the theme of what we were trying to build on. And so here we are.
And we're seeing this very much as a community conversation. You know, the fact that, again, Perseverance, Northern Light, Veterans for Peace are also involved, the congregation, People for Peace and Justice, that there's so much more that we can take away, hopefully. And after each performance, we're going to have post-discussions for whoever wants to stick around. And we have some really wonderful people who will act as a very casual moderator. And they are Pastor Phil Campbell from Northern Light, Rabbi Avi Fein, who comes up from Los Angeles Monthly, Ray Pastorino, who is a well-known mediator in this town, and Judge Bud Carpinetti. So it's really quite wonderful who is stepping in and wanting to work and seeing how important this is that we all work together, because we all live here and we all know each other the best, really. And our differences aren't that great if we stop and listen.
Absolutely. So that will be after the play. Listeners, if you get a chance, I would definitely find, you can find the trailer for this play, or I guess, do you call it a trailer?
It is,
Amy?
Yeah.
And you can see Aaron acting, and it's remarkable.
You can find it on the Perseverance's Facebook page, yeah, or at WrestlingJerusalem.com.
And then, of course, it will be followed with this dialogue that you speak of.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, good work, everyone, on getting this up here. This starts next week. Again, remind us the times and dates.
Sure. It's Thursday and Friday evening at 7:30, and then Saturday and Sunday at 2 p.m.
Okay. I wish we had more time to talk about this. Tickets are where?
Tickets at ptalaska.org or by calling 463-TIXS.
Okay. Anything else anyone would like to add?
Join us next week sometime.
Okay. Thanks, everyone, for coming
on
the show.
Thank you.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday. It's the 22nd of February, 2016. It's the birthday of the first president of the United States, George Washington, born in Westmoreland County, Virginia, in 1732, whose favorite foods were mashed sweet potatoes with coconut string beans, with mushrooms, cream of peanut soup, salt, cod, and pineapples. He also liked Brazilian nuts, and he cracked them between his jaws, which was the reason he lost all of his teeth except for one and had to get dentures made out of a hippopotamus tusk. It was a painful thing to have in his mouth, and he used opium to alleviate the pain. George Washington, who was not very good at spelling and had a speech impediment, and whose inaugural address was the shortest in history, 133 words long, and even with false teeth, it took him just 90 seconds to deliver it. It's the birthday of the poet Gerald Stern, born in Pittsburgh in 1925, the birthday of the poet Edna St. Vincent Millay, born Rockland, Maine, 1892. She had two sisters. Her parents divorced when the girls were small. Her mother moved her daughters from town to town. They lived in poverty, but they had volumes of poetry, and the mother read them to her children. The girl entered a poetry contest. She won fourth place with a poem that would turn out to be one of her most famous, Renaissance. She was disappointed, but she read the poem aloud, and it impressed a wealthy woman named Caroline Dow, who offered to pay for Millay's education at Vassar. Millay went there at the age of 20. She was a slight woman with flaming red hair, a big personality, graduated from Vassar, went to Greenwich Village to live the bohemian life, lived in an attic apartment at 75 and one-half Bedford Street, 9 feet long, 6 feet wide. For a time, Edna St. Vincent Millay was the most famous poet in America. And it was on this date in 1878 Frank Woolworth opened the first of his 5-cent stores, which later became a dime store in Utica, New York. The innovation was that shoppers could look at the merchandise, did not have to ask a clerk to bring it to them. Here's a poem for today by Gerald Stern entitled Waving Goodbye. I wanted to know what it was like before we had voices and before we had bare fingers and before we had minds to move us through our actions and tears to help us over our feelings. So I drove my daughter through the snow to meet her friend and filled her car with suitcases and hugged her as an animal would, pressing my forehead against her, walking in circles, moaning, touching her cheek, and turned my head after them as an animal would, watching helplessly as they drove over the ruts, her smiling face and her small hand just visible over the giant pillows and coat hangers as they made their turn into the empty highway. A poem by Gerald Stern, Waving Goodbye, from This Time, published by Norton and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Progressive Insurance, with insurance for cars, home, boat, motorcycles, RVs, and commercial vehicles at 1-800-PROGRESSIVE and progressive.com. Writer's Almanac supported by Staples, offering tech services for small businesses like PC setup and repair, some tasks completed by the next day. Staples.com/tech services. Staples, make more happen. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Support for this station comes from Ken Kelsch, candidate for mayor. Paid for by Kelsch for Mayor. 1586 Evergreen Avenue, Juneau, Alaska.
You're listening to a Juneau Afternoon here on Thursday, February 25th, 2016. Scott Burton, your host, in for Joan Parnas. It's about 32 minutes after the hour, and joining me in the studio now is Audra Henderson, and she is the school administrator and admissions coordinator for a new cosmetology school that's located out in the valley. Welcome to the show, Audra.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's nice to have you here. So tell us about the name of the school and how it came to be.
So the school came to be by our owner. Kimberly Savlin has been in the business about 20 years. In fact, she owned a school previously, a larger school in the Valley, and it was only hairdressing. And then she went out on her own, did small, you know, her own business for a while, and then decided she really wanted to come back and do bring a school to Juneau, but do it differently, smaller classes, more individualized learning, that sort of thing.
Okay. And then in February, you opened officially, is that right?
Correct. February 1st.
And remind me the name of the school?
Alaska Academy of Advanced Cosmetology.
Okay. And tell us about some of the classes and degree programs that folks can take out there.
Right. So as I mentioned, all of the courses, the number of hours are determined by the state of Alaska. So we have a hairdressing or barbering course. It's 1,650 hours. We have a we have an aesthetics course, and that's 400 hours. We have an advanced nail tech course, so that's manicuring and pedicuring. It's a 250-hour course. And then we also have an instructor training and advanced training. And those two are designed for professionals that are already in the industry that maybe want to take an additional class to learn a specific skill, things like that.
Okay. And you are an administrator, but you yourself are an esthetician, is that right?
Correct. Yes. It was, you know, actually I have a different background as well in public health, and I just always liked this industry. I love, you know, being in places where people have a desire to go and in places where you get to focus on making people feel good, you know, not necessarily beautifying them, but just the atmosphere of working with people. And it's a beautiful space that we have up there with a view of the glacier. It's a nice, it's a great place to be. And I just always like skincare. So
yeah, so you're right above the sandbar, is
correct.
That right?
Mm-hmm.
Across the street from Don Abel, there on Industrial. I think you answered the question I was about to ask you, but, you know, what kind of person likes going into cosmetology? And it sounds like people that enjoy being in a place where people are, I mean, it seems like people are generally very happy when they go to the salon or the barber.
I agree. You know, people that do best in the industry, I would say, are extroverts, people that like being, that are creative, that like working with other people, are the best, I would say, in the industry.
Okay. What's the job outlook these days for somebody in cosmetology?
So that's a good question. It depends on which trade, I guess, you're going into, but and also where you want to live. But one of the huge benefits about this industry is, like any trade, you can essentially go where you want to go. So, and we have students that want to open up their own place, you know, inside their house, students that want to move outside of state, that want to work on cruise ships or whatever it is that they want to do. They have the ability to do that.
Okay, so it sounds very mobile.
It is very mobile. And in Juneau, I mean, we already know there's higher needs in some of these areas, so we're happy to fill that gap as well.
Okay, sounds interesting. If somebody wants to figure out more, Audra, where should they go?
They can come in. So we do have walk-in hours Tuesday through Friday from 5 to 8, so people can come in and get haircuts and other hair services already. They can give us a call. Our phone number is 789-WAVE, which is easy to remember. And our website is theviewspa.com.
Okay. Very interesting. The Alaska Academy of Advanced Cosmetology, located above the sandbar in the valley. Sounds a lot like lots of opportunities out there. Again, theviewspa.com or 789-WAVE. Audra, is there anything else you'd like to add?
Actually, yes. I would like to add that we are a school, but that we also are focusing on kind of wellness and a, you know, wellness-focused school. So as part of our education, we also want to educate our students and the community as a whole about, you know, purchasing products that are clean and environmentally friendly, but clean for themselves and free of, you know, known carcinogens. So we're happy to bring in some of those product lines, cosmetic lines, hair lines that are on the cleaner side.
Okay, and I just remembered something else. You were mentioning that a lot of your classes you like to have 6 people or below. That sounds like a nice student-to-teacher ratio.
We do.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, Audra Henderson, thanks for coming into the show.
Thank you.
This is Bird Note. In the rosy glow of a sunrise on a southwestern marsh, a pair of sandhill cranes calls in unison. With a graceful leap, wings outstretched, the two cranes welcome the last days of February. The stately cranes are courting, renewing an annual dance they perform in earnest as the days lengthen into spring. The dance begins with a downward bow, the cranes' long, slender bills nearly touching the ground. Then, like enormous marionettes pulled deftly upward, the cranes leap several feet off the ground, wings outstretched. Bowing and leaping, raising and lowering their wings, the cranes dance on as the sun rises. Sandhill crane pairs remain together for life, and their spirited dance plays an essential role in reaffirming this bond. The crane's exquisite dance complements beautifully their rich, rolling calls, one of nature's most memorable anthems. The elegant sandhills will leap and dance a few days more before migrating north to nest. You can see a video of sandhill cranes in their courtship dance on our website, birdnote.org. I'm Mary McCann.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Thursday, February 25th. Scott Burton in for Joan Pardis. It's about 20 minutes until the top of the hour. And joining me now in the studio is KJ Metcalf and Joel Bennett. They're here to talk about the Friends of Admiralty's annual meeting and other things, Friends of Admiralty. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Scott. Good to be here.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Nice to have you guys on the show. KJ, remind me, how many years Friends of Admiralty has been in existence?
Well, we were formed in 1997, and primarily as a public advocacy group to promote the scientific and educational aspects of Admiralty Island.
Okay. And how long have you been involved since
the
inception? How about you, Joel?
I've been involved since then as well, you know, I think many people in this community join with us in recognizing the inestimable values of Admiralty and, of course, the traditional village existence there and their cultural values, as well as all the recreational potential and other, you know, resources there. So we feel like we have quite a large following in addition to our membership.
And what initially drew each of you? How did you develop your passion for Admiralty?
Well, I first visited Admiralty in 1962, actually Angoon. And over the years, I thought that was one of the most unique and beautiful places on this earth. And I was the first ranger when it was created as a national monument, working for the Forest Service. So I had a connection with Angoon and worked with Angoon. And after I took an early retirement, my wife and I moved to Angoon, and we lived there for 18 years and became well acquainted with folks in the village and found the culture to be, you know, a great learning experience. I thought I had gone to school to get my education, but my education really started when I moved to Angoon.
How about you, Joel?
Well, in the mid-70s, I started a career in film, primarily for television, and the film that I made about Admiralty Island was the first film that I undertook. A conservation organization, and you know, it was kind of what showed me really existed on the island. And you know, I captured everything from brown bears to village life in Angoon, and the film called Admiralty Island Fortress of the Bears was actually used in committee in Congress leading up to the proclamation of the island as a national monument, and later as a national monument wilderness area by Congress. So it really launched, you know, what would be 25 years of filmmaking.
Okay. So your annual meeting is coming up, is that right?
That's right, this Saturday at the Juneau Yacht Club. And we're going to start at about 4 o'clock with a meeting that really normally billed as our business meeting, but what we'll really do is we'll give folks a chance to understand the study that we just completed in Hawk Inlet, where we found kind of alarming things, high levels of toxins in the sediment and then some of the tissue of the animals. And so we'd invite all folks to come and kind of sit in on that, and we'll talk about the technical aspects of it, and then we have a community potluck that starts at 6, and we also have a silent auction, which starts about 5, and that will also include dessert, so you can bring a dish to the potluck and bid on a dessert. And then we've got a really nice evening program that starts at 7, and that's with Dennis Rogers of Petersburg, who runs cruises up into Seymour Canal. And I'll let Joel talk a little bit about Seymour. That's an amazing place.
It is an amazing place. I think so many of your listeners know that in the winter, whales concentrate there in quite amazing numbers, in the hundreds, because of the feed there, the krill. But it's also been recognized as one of the highest concentrations of nesting bald eagles on the island. And just about every, there's a very large number of salmon streams on both sides of Seymour Canal, which attract, of course, brown bears during salmon season. So, you know, because it's somewhat protected as well from winds and the more open water, it's used a lot with kayakers and canoers and other boaters. So it's really a special place on the island, and I think anybody who's been there would second that.
So Dennis has some amazing photography, and his natural history and scientific tours up there sound like an incredible opportunity. So he will be presenting that as a keynote speaker for the evening, and we're all looking forward to that.
Okay. It sounds like a full evening, starting at 4, and you'll be talking about, you handed me, KJ, your newsletter, Friends of Admiralty Island newsletter, and the toxic metals contaminate Hawk Inlet sediments. So that's what you start with at 4.
That's right.
Okay. And then at 5, the silent auction starts, and then those proceeds support Friends of Admiralty
Island. Right. And they'll all go to the Hawk Inlet project. We've been at that for 1 year. And this last spring is when we started our collection in there. Did over 100 samples and had each one tested for 11 metals. So that's over 1,000 tests. And while it's not the definitive work, it certainly points to the need for more scientific work in the area.
Okay, and this is open to all members of
the
public?
Oh, everybody, yeah.
Member or not, a friend.
Oh, yeah, just anybody interested in this incredible place that we live.
So that's this Saturday at the Juneau Yacht Club, starting at 4.
Right.
Okay, gentlemen, Joel Bennett, KJ Metcalf, thanks for coming on the show. Are we missing anything?
No, that's great. Thank you, Scott.
Thanks.
Like Jesse James.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Thursday, and it's that time every Thursday when Nancy DeCherney, the Executive Director of the Juno Arts and Humanities Council, comes over to the show and tells us what's happening in the community this weekend. Welcome to the show, Nancy.
Thank you. Boy, we have another full packed weekend. What a surprise.
Wow. When does it begin?
When does it? Okay. Well, it does start tonight. There's a Cycle Alaska has an adventure series that they do, and Alice Tiernan will be talking about some adventures on her bike, 5 p.m. down at Cycle Alaska.
Where did she, does it say where she went?
It doesn't say where she went, so okay. We'll have to go to see.
I guess so.
There's Dark Winter Nights at the Juno Public Library from 6 to 8. I don't know what that's all about either, but I'm tired of them.
Right?
I'm tired of them, the Dark Winter Nights.
Yeah, maybe these stories will help you process them.
Oh, okay. We're coming up on Daylight Savings Time. It's not this week, but coming soon. Bluegrass Thursday over at the Red Dog Saloon at 6:30 to 8:30. And let's see, we'll move into Friday from 1 to 3. It's Science Friday at the Mendenhall Public Library. They're talking about the science of accessibility. The SAIL folks will be there with all sorts of tools and whatnot that they use in their work. Science on Screen, the free film screening. I think that this is in collaboration with Gold Town Nickelodeon. The Elephant Man is probably the one they're doing. I don't remember if it's that one or the next one. But, and also, 5:30 to 7:30, it's the Seas Sailor Talk number 2. It's at Northwind Architects. So if you're a sailor and want to get involved in the sailing community, go down there to Northwind Architects on Seward Street from 5:30 to 7:30. And then there's plenty of opportunities to eat this weekend. Let me just say that, in case you're hungry. There's the Territorial Sportsman. Their annual banquet and fundraiser is at Centennial Hall on Friday night at 5:30 to 10. At Rockwell, they're having the Traveler Duo. From 6:30 to 7:30, there's Learn to Skate over at the Juno Skating Club. There's 8 p.m. at the Hangar Ballroom B&B with Cogs and Goggles. It's a steampunk sort of improv group. Marley Improv's bringing some really fun things, and they're doing them at the Hangar Ballroom. This is $10 at the door. On Saturday, there's the Nordic Ski Race. There's a Tongass CrossFit Open House Barbecue on Mill Street. There's Saturdays with Extension starting a cottage food business. So if you're feeling like you want to start growing things and whatnot, 1:30 to 3:30 at the Douglas Library, that's free. The improv group is doing a improv workshop at the ballroom called Playing with Heart, sort of how to get in, right into your character. That's from 2 to 3 at the ballroom. Hearthside Books has a book signing with Diesel Jester out at the Nugget Mall. Friends of Admiralty, you were just talking about that. The Girl Scouts have their... I want to say that we've missed the Red Cross in here somewhere. There's a Red Cross dinner, and I think it's on Friday, and I think it's at our place, so I think I should know this. And they're having Thunder Mountain Big Band, and it's catered by Abby's, so come on down for that. It's a fundraiser for Red Cross, and it is on Friday. It's at the same time as the you'll have to eat twice. I can see this happening now. You know, run across from the Territorial Sportsman and go over and have dinner at the Red Cross and then go dancing with Thunder Mountain. And then there's the Girl Scouts on Saturday from 6 to 9. They're having their 24th annual auction and dinner and snacks and stuff. You and I were just talking about cookies, and they're here.
Yes, the Girl Scout cookies are in Juno, people.
Be ready. Yes. The Samoa binge begins. There's also the Alaska Beatdown number 23 at Centennial Hall at 7 p.m. on Saturday night, and a second performance of the B&B with Cogs and Goggles at the Hangar. There's the Ukulele Jam over at T.K. McGuire's Sunday morning at 11. There's folk dancing at the Downtown Alaska Club Sunday at 6 p.m. There's karaoke at the Suite 907 at 9 p.m. On Monday at noon, there's a Climate Street Theater. That's happening at the Capitol Building. Sounds like fun. I don't know what they're going to do. And we always have the Skiers Friday over at the Hangars on the wharf at Monday. And let's see, Diesel Engine Simplified Class is on Tuesday at 6 p.m. There's an evening with Matt Herskowitz, the trio that the Sitka Summer Music Festival is bringing. That will be at the Jack. It's on Tuesday at 7:30. And a wonderful trio. I've had an opportunity to hear them. So if you can, do that. West Coast Swing Dancing at Suite 907 on Tuesday. On Wednesday is the Banff Mountain Film Festival and Wildlife Wednesday. They're talking about Blue Carbon at the Valley Public Library, and there's an old-time music jam. And then we're getting ready for the Wrestling for Jerusalem thing, which you've just talked about, which will start on Thursday of next week.
Exciting times. I was just thinking, like, what if we had a passport or if there's a Juno Book of World Records where somebody went to every event?
We do have that. Yeah, and unfortunately, I think people have kind of forgotten about it, but mm-hmm. we do have them. And if you've checked off and you've been to one of every represented group's events, we're going to have a drawing in June. And somebody could win $500.
I see a fundraiser in there, too, like an art bus. Like mm-hmm. one night, it goes to every art event.
And one of my, actually, I think next year we'll do the art passport a little bit more organized so that you can buy that passport and have everybody's season in it. But also, I've always thought about just having a ticket to stay home. And you buy a ticket to stay home, and we'll split it amongst all the different groups that had something going on that weekend. So you don't have to feel guilty. You wanted to support the Red Cross, you can do that, but you can stay home too.
Brilliant. The one, the only, Nancy Detourney. More information at the calendar you put together at where?
JAHC.org and KTOO.org. Thanks,
Scott. Nancy. Thanks for tuning into a Juno Afternoon. Andy Klein will be your host tomorrow, and he'll get a preview of this week's fireside lecture about the Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center at the center, featuring John Krapek talking about yellow cedar trees. Callie Connerton from UAS will be here to highlight next week's Banff Mountain Film Festival. We'll learn about the Girl Scouts 24th annual auction, and Portland-based improvisers B&B will be here with a preview of their shows this weekend. Looks like tonight's forecast calls for rain, lows around 44.
Is humankind